originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another five-star edition of Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton right here on your home for all of racing's biggest events and the sport's most popular talk shows, the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, alongside our very own retired top trainer. That's the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld. We are coming to you once again from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios right here in the heart of the Bluegrass, Lexington, Kentucky. And this is, of course, the show trainers listen to, which I know that to be true because our guest here tonight has told me he listens to this program, and we're looking forward to visiting with him over the course of the next hour. JT, we also want to welcome everybody that's tuning in on Sirius XM, Sirius 219, XM 206, and all of those people who are joining us worldwide at horseracingradio.net, either with our live streaming or with our podcast. Again, horseracingradio.net.
Yeah, I love it when we have the young guys on, and our goal is to make sure that they don't have the time to listen to this program.
So, yeah, isn't that true?
At least they can podcast it, listen to it while they jog or whatever. But yeah, it's great that we have so many trainers and trainers' wives listening in, and people stop us on the road and say, "Oh, I love Trainer Talk."
Yeah.
So it's cool.
Yeah, so many times we have the chance to visit with the more well-known trainers in the sport, guys like Todd Pletcher and Bob Baffert and Richard Mandela that have established themselves as elite trainers. Then you mentioned some of the young guys we've had the chance to visit with, including tonight. We're going to be joined by a gentleman by the name of Matt Shearer, who is just 32 years old. He grew up where all great thoroughbred trainers come from, right? Cleveland, Ohio.
Well, I actually know a few trainers in Cleveland, Ohio.
So, do you? Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, that's not considered the epicenter of thoroughbred racing, but that it's cool. I was reading his story on the website and really enjoyed it.
Well, Matt, welcome to the program. Happy to have you with us here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah, it should be fun.
Yeah, and I say that jokingly about the hotbed of thoroughbred trainers in Cleveland, Ohio, not really known for producing top-notch thoroughbred trainers, at least an abundance of them. But here you are, 32 years old, and you've really got this thing rolling, my friend. Well done.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, hopefully I'm the first big-name trainer. I don't. There's not too many, I know that, but, it's been fun so far. I mean, it's been a fun ride so far. So we've gotten off to a good start this year. So
I actually went back to Google that just to make sure I wasn't leaving anybody out. I didn't want to offend anybody when I made that statement.
I didn't find
many.
Well. No, you would. Yeah, you wouldn't. Especially, I mean, I'm from just south of Cleveland. I'm from Medina, Ohio, technically. I mean, you say Cleveland because it's the biggest city, so I'm a little bit south of Cleveland, but Medina, Ohio is not exactly known for horse racing, I didn't know anybody growing up that had any horses or anything like that, so and it's kind of a unique place to come from, but it's where I'm at now. So
yeah, that was one of the most interesting things I thought about your story. You didn't grow up in a racing family, and you kind of found horse racing on your own.
Yeah, I mean, I was when I went to college, I was an animal science major, and at the time, of course, you go to college and you major, but you don't always know exactly what you're gonna do once you finish school. And obviously you don't need a degree or anything to necessarily train horses. I mean, I think it helps in its own way, but I didn't I didn't exactly know what I was going to do when I was when I majored with animal science, but I just kind of found my way to the track. I mean, I think originally I got a job at Thistledown, which of course is the local track there. I guess you call it local. It's still a little bit of a drive for me, but. You know, I think I was just walking hots, you know, one summer or something like that. I just decided to go up to the track and see what it was all about. You know, I really didn't know, I mean, I didn't know anything about horse racing, to be honest with you. I just knew I'd watched it on TV, and it was, you know, it looked interesting. And, you know, of course, on TV, it's a little bit of a different, you get a little bit of a different view of it because you're watching the Derby and you know the suits and the nice horses, you know, and everything, and then you kind of go to the racetrack and it's, you know, Thistledown racetrack, which, no offense, I mean, Thistledown, it's a good track and everything, but it's a little different than what you see on TV, so it's a little bit of a shock to you, but yeah, I mean, it was just kind of a random thing, and I've just been able to stick with it ever since.
You're obviously an animal guy, right? I mean, animal science, yeah. That kind of thing. You had a lot of pets growing up, or
yeah. My parents could tell you about that. Yeah, I had plenty of you know, animals, pets, whatever, you know. But I don't know. It was just always something that interested me. I was never really one to, you know, I didn't want kind of like the quote unquote, like office job, you know, 9-to-5 type of deal. It really didn't interest me. You know, so as a kid, I just, you know, I know I'd read a lot of books and stuff, and, you know, it wasn't always necessarily just horses, but like you said, yeah, just kind of animals and in general. And by the time I got to, you know, I got to school, it was, you know, majoring in animal science. I mean, it covers a variety of different things. I mean, it wasn't just animals, you know, with my degree, it was, you know, you take a lot of chemistry classes and geology classes and, you know, just different science classes like that, which I always probably tend to like a little bit more than any other subjects. And, you know, it just kind of felt like a good fit to major in something that I, you know, had an interest in. That way sometimes it's not so much, you know, like school. I mean, at least you, obviously it is, but at least you enjoy what you're learning about. And if you have that kind of interest in it, then you tend to put a little bit more effort and time into it. So it was a good experience.
Well, if you look up animal science online, it's defined as being the study of the biology of animals that are under the control of humankind. And you now have several animals in your control. So talk to me about that. Are there some things, Matt, with your degree that kind of help you when you're starting to work with these horses as a trainer?
Well, I mean, certain things can. I mean, you can apply certain things that you learned, you know, to horses or to training. I mean, to be honest with you, you know, I think it's more about, you know, just obviously in horse racing or training horses, it takes a lot of work and a lot of, you know, you have to have a certain work ethic, and, you know, it's a 7-day-a-week job and everything. So it's kind of like, you know, surviving, you know, college and getting your degree and everything. You kind of learn, you know, your work ethic and how to apply certain things. And I can't say there's any specific subject in school where I could just take from and apply to the way I train horses, but, you know, it was a good experience. You know, you kind of, like I said, you develop that discipline and, you know, work ethic to kind of get the job done, you know, so that's kind of what's benefited me, you know, the most, than necessarily a specific subject or something like that I could apply. So
how hard has it been for you being an animal person and have had a lot of pets in your life and stuff? Now you're a claiming horse trainer, and you get a new horse and you work on him, and you know, sometimes you have a tendency to to, you know, get attached to them, and then somebody claims them off you. Has that presented any issues with for you at all?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, but you kind of, you know, as an assistant, you know, I was an assistant, obviously, before I became a head trainer. And, I mean, you try to not get too close to them. Obviously, you still want to enjoy, you know, the horse when you have them, but you also have to realize it's part of the game. You know, the claiming game is, you know, it can be tough sometimes because you have horses constantly coming in and out, but it's enjoyable because you get to learn about new things, new horses. You learn something new from every horse that you get. So it's good to kind of have an experience, you know, as an assistant, having horses that constantly come in, you know, you just, like I said, you learn different things about different horses, and you try not to get too attached, but it's still, you know, you gotta kind of enjoy the experience while you have the horse and learn about them and try to improve them and, you know, and move them up and move them on sometimes. And that's part of the, you know, the joy of it.
Visiting with trainer Matt Shearer here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Matt, you mentioned being an assistant before you went out on your own. That's not an uncommon approach to training horses. We see several trainers that have done it that way. You worked with Kenny McPeak. Tell me about that time frame and working with Kenny.
Yeah, I worked for Kenny. I think it was probably about 3 years. I had originally, like I said, I was working up at Thistledown, and I just did, I started from the bottom and did a lot of hot walking and stuff and eventually move on to being a groom. You kind of learn the business from the ground up there and learn about horses and how to do bandages and, you know, just different types of things. And, you know, I was about as green as they come when I first started. And I worked at Thistledown for, I want to say, a year or two, and that was usually during the summers. And then once I got out of college, I went back to work there, and I took a short time off from the track, only to, of course, go back to it, which, you know, I'm sure lots of other people they get bit by that racing bug, I guess, and, you know, they always find their way back to the track. But I eventually applied. I don't know if it was applied. I think because Kenny's real good about, you know, kind of like a Facebook presence or, you know, like a marketing presence. He's a very easy trainer to get a hold of, you know, for anyone who may not be in Kentucky or may not know him. So I think I emailed Kenny. I think he emailed his website, and I think they sent me an email back. And, you know, I was saying, you know, looking for a job. And I think it was just kind of one of those things where it was good timing, and he ended up hiring me when I showed up, and I was with him for a good 3 years, and you learn a lot. You know, I think anyone who wants to train horses on their own should work for somebody like McPeak or Pletcher or Baffert or, you know, the kind of bigger name guys, because those are the guys that, you know, they're successful in this business. And I think you should, you know, especially as a young person, you should learn from the way the successful guys do things. So, you know, working for Kenny, I mean, it was a great experience. You know, we won a lot of big races. I've walked over for the Derby. You know, we had two horses in the Derby a couple years ago with Frack Daddy and Java's War, both of which had won, or I know Java's War, he won the Bluegrass there at Keeneland. And, you know, just being a part of that, I think was, you know, a big deal for me or anyone, you know, any young person in the business. So, you know, you're exposed, you know, working for Kenny or anyone like that, you're exposed to a lot of good horses, you know, which is a good thing, because you kind of learn the difference between, you know, the good horses, the bad horses, the in-betweens. And, you know, especially with Kenny, you know, as an assistant, you're given a lot of responsibility. I mean, he kind of runs things the way, you know, he goes out to the sales and, you know, he picks out his horses that he wants. And, you know, he's kind of at that point in his career where he builds a stable based on the horses that he buys at the sales, which I would, you know, love to be at that point, you know, in the future, obviously maybe not right now, but at some point where, you know, he goes out and he brings in the talent and you know, as the assistant, you know, train the horses and you're exposed to, you know, I mean, you have a lot of responsibility as an assistant. I think you learn fast working for someone like Kenny. And I was able to do that, you know, and we had a lot of good horses. I mean, I think one of my first, you know, or one of my really the best experiences worked for Kenny was we had a nice filly that he had bought, you know, at the sale, a filly named Pure Fawn. He bought her fairly cheap and she turned out to be a grade one winner for us. And I remember being able to fly out on the airplane with her to Hollywood Park, which I don't think Hollywood Park exists anymore, but I ended up being able to fly out there with her, and we took her out there, and I saddled her, and, you know, we got a grade one win out of it, and it was just a good experience. I mean, without working for someone like Kenny, you know, you don't come across something like that.
Matt Shearer, our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Matt, you mentioned learning a lot from Kenny, and you mentioned some of those experiences that we'll touch on, including making the walkover for the Kentucky Derby. I can only imagine what that was like. But how would you describe Ken McPeak as a teacher for his young trainers that are coming up under him?
I think, you know, I mean, I would say that, you know, it's not necessarily like he's going to be the guy that, you know, puts his arm around you and says, here you go, you know, this is that. He kind of relies on you to be, you know, to take responsibility for everything. And you know, one of the best things is, I mean, you get to kind of make your own decisions. And obviously he points out, you know, what's right and what's wrong. And he shows you from the start, you know, like Kenny, he's very, he's a little bit of a perfectionist in a way, you know, where certain things in the barn have to look a certain way. And I think he applies that to the way he picks out horses. I mean, he's a little bit of a perfectionist in that way. And you kind of learn from watching what he does. It's not necessarily, you know, where he just, like I said, he tells you exactly this is that. You kind of have to be able to be quick enough and sharp enough to kind of keep up with what's going on, because so much stuff is constantly going on in the barn. And, you know, I mean, it's good to be able to learn from someone like that. You know, I think I learned a lot, not necessarily just from a training standpoint of training this horse or that horse, but a lot of what I took away from my experience with Kenny was being able to identify a good horse. And I think that has helped me right now in the claiming game, because, you know, you learn from Kenny what to look for. Like Kenny, he's very picky. He's very big on, you know, a horse's hip, the way it should be, the way it should, you know, the way it should look, the way they should walk and hit the ground, and the way they track. And I think watching, you know, the horses that I was in charge of, that obviously he had picked out at the sale, and then, you know, as an assistant, you watch them train, you watch them walk. You almost kind of get like a blueprint almost in your head of what a good horse looks like and acts like. And like I said, I think that has kind of helped me, you know, at this point in my career of claiming horses, because I'm, you know, I think in the claiming, you have to be, you know, you have to watch all the races. You have to look at all these horses that are in the paddock, even if they're not, you know, necessarily claiming races. I go over to the paddock every race day, and I'm looking at every single horse in that, you know, that walks through the paddock, because at some point they're going to, you know, possibly drop into the claiming ranks, and you have to be able to pick out which ones, you know, would be a nice one, which ones aren't. And that's, I think that's, you know, plays a little bit of a part of why we've been successful so far claiming horses, and that's because of, you know, the kind of the things that you learn, you know, or that I learned from Kenny, even though it wasn't necessarily something so obvious that he was, you know, picking out or showing me. It's just kind of you learn from your experience.
He's got a finger in every pie in the thoroughbred business. He buys horses at sales, buys foreign horses, claims horses, has a farm, lots of different aspects of the industry that you can learn from Kenny McPeak. And I was reading today that he's going to be part of this new program to teach people how to work at the racetrack. And that's interesting as well. He's a very proactive guy. He's, you know, as you mentioned, active on social media. He's a real interesting guy and has so many interests and takes part in so many facets of our industry that I would think that's a nice all-around education.
Yeah, I wasn't aware, you know, of what you're talking about there about teaching people, you know, how to work on the track. But I mean that, you know, just hearing that, yeah, that's important. Obviously, you know, you want you young people or whoever it is coming into the business. I mean, because, you know, that's what would keep this this business going. I mean, I think some people would tell you, oh, it's a dying business, but it doesn't have to be. I mean, so, you know, for someone like Kenny to, you know, establish programs like that or to help out, you know, with already established programs like that, I mean, that's a big deal. And yeah, I mean, he's kind of got his hand in every part of the industry, which again was a good experience for me. I mean, you know, with his with social media being so big, you know, the way it is now, you know, with Twitter, Facebook, whatever, Kenny's always had a large, you know, kind of presence there, which again I think is important nowadays. You know, because everyone is so dependent on their phones or computers, it's nice, you know, that someone like Kenny is kind of paving the way a little bit there with his app and everything else that he's obviously involved in.
Well, I'm glad you bring up the social media and online aspect of what Kenny's involved with, because I know, Matt, you're involved with, you have your own website, you have a Twitter account. How important is it for trainers in this modern era to be able to interact with clients and keep people in the loop via social media and websites and things like that?
I mean, I think it's extremely, you know, important. You know, I'm obviously, you know, I've just finished my first year of training, and, you know, running your own business, it's new for, you know, a lot of people that have never done it. So it's going to be new. Like, you know, so for me, I know that one of the biggest, you know, kind of problems, I guess you could say, when you're first training on your own is getting your name out there. So obviously, what's the best way to get your name out there? And that's usually through social media. So, or at least it is nowadays. You know, that's kind of the way the business is turning. Or
it's coming on Trainer Talk, Matt. That's how you get your name out there. It's Horse Racing Radio,
you know,
Network.
I, like you guys were saying at the beginning, I've actually gone on your website, and I've listened to a lot of previous podcasts of different trainers. I'd always look for, you know, somebody I knew, or, you know, I think I've listened to maybe the Joe Sharp podcast, or, you know, I think I listened to Brad Cox podcast, you know, and that sort of stuff is important, you know, so you guys play a large role in it too. I mean, this, you know, doing this right now is good for me because people listen and get your name out there, and they can kind of hear your opinions on, you know, different subjects and things. So, you know, social media is extremely, you know, important nowadays, whereas, you know, 10 years ago, it may not have been, you know, on anybody's radar necessarily to, you know, advertise or anything like that, you know. But again, back to, you know, working for Kenny, I mean, you just, you know, from day one when I worked for him, I mean, it was always, you know, I mean, he was very strong in that aspect, that field of, you know, with his Horse Races Now app and, you know, advertising and marketing, and you know, it's just you know, at this point, I guess that's just the way that this business is leaning a little bit now, or at least it should, you know, because you know, that would probably be beneficial for everybody.
Yeah, well, you know, we were talking about Kenny, you know, always being at the forefront of things, and this new program with the new immigration laws and stuff. A lot of people are concerned about the workforce in racing, and I think this is one way to get you know, maybe some Americans involved in taking care of horses that have never thought about that before. Kind of the way that you started out, you know, on your own. And a lot of people maybe would like to be in the horse racing business, but they don't know how to get started and stuff. And all these little things that you learn along the way, they can, you know, make your future so bright. And I admire you for going back and listening to podcasts of other trainers. And, you know, a lot of people don't want to put in the work, but it really helps, you know, to know who your competition is and how they get started and what mentality they have as far as training horses. All those things can help you.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you say that, because I, you know, even before, you know, getting in the business, I mean, when I was just kind of watching the Kentucky Derby or something like that, before I really knew anything about horse racing, I mean, you can go on the internet and you can Google, you know, whoever's name it is. And I used to do that all the time. I mean, I looked up all sorts of people, and I was always really interested in, you know, kind of finding like somebody's, you know, biography or something. Like, you know, I'd like to read about, you know, this guy came from here or there, and, you know, how they got. I was always kind of interested in how they all, you know, got involved. And of course there's always that common theme of, you know, their dad was a trainer or something like that, but I was actually always interested in the guys who kind of came out of nowhere or something like that to, you know, to go on to be a successful trainer. And you know, I'm trying to think of one or two guys I remember reading about. You know, I mean, what I think I read about maybe Peter Walder or something one time. I think I read his biography one time. Sounded like he was maybe like a baseball player or something like that. I don't think he necessarily had any connections in the business. And I would go back, like I said, listen to podcasts, read biographies, you know, anything I could just to kind of get myself a little bit more familiar with the business, I guess.
Well, Matt Shearer, as you've heard, is a guy who has somewhat come from nowhere, as he just said. Didn't have any experience in racing, but now he does, and he's doing very well. We'll continue this visit in the second half of the program. Stay with us. We're back with more right after this on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.
Nominate your yearlings now to the Fasig Tipton Summer Selected Yearling Sales. These sales are the top three yearling sales in North America by rate of return. The July sale in Lexington, Kentucky, July 10th and 11th. The Saratoga sale in Saratoga Springs, New York, August 7th and 8th. And the New York Bred sale in Saratoga Springs, New York, August 12th and 13th. Selected sales, superior results. Nominate today at FasigTipton.com.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at BloomRacing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Rosso Maia, one of the names in the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
This is Trainer Talk on HRRN, presented by Fasig Tipton.
And welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld. We are in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios, visiting with trainer Matt Shearer, who is really just getting started with his career and doing very, very well, off to a fast start. JT, we want to remind people that if they miss any portion of this program or any of our Trainer Talk shows, they can head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. They can listen to a podcast there, or they can do it on iTunes, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. And so many people have come up to us, as we talked about earlier. They've said, hey, we enjoy listening to the podcast. Thanks for doing it. And we are very thankful to everybody who has supported us and come on board to listen to these programs. Well, we told you in the first half of the show that Matt grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, didn't have anybody in his family that was involved in horse racing. He attended Ohio Wesleyan University and went there with some other aspirations too. It wasn't just about learning about horses and animals with his degree in animal science. Matt, you were also very much into basketball and got a chance to play at that Division III school.
Yeah, I mean, early on in my, you know, childhood, I mean, I played a lot of sports, and my sister was, you know, she played a lot of sports as well. We were just kind of an active kind of family, and my sister, she ended up playing Division I soccer at, she got a full ride, full scholarship to Ohio State there, so she played soccer there, and I kind of tended to focus on basketball. As I got into high school, and I went to a fairly large high school. Is technically, well, what they call in Ohio a Division I school. I think Kentucky might call it something. I don't know what the 3A or 1A. I don't know, but in Ohio, it was, you know, I went to a fairly large high school, and I played with a lot of good players. You know, I played. When I was a sophomore, I think I made the city team, and one of the guys on my team, he ended up, he was a senior the year I was a sophomore, and he ended up being Mr. Basketball in the state of Ohio. So he was named as, you know, the best player in the state at the time. So we used to kind of get a lot of exposure that way. You know, in high school, we played in front of extremely large crowds because of this other player. The name's Tony Stockman, and we actually, through him, we got to go play, you know, like summer league games and open gyms over at a place called St. Vincent St. Mary's, which I think if anybody actually, you know, that knows Ohio basketball would tell you that's, you know, LeBron James played for St. Vincent St. Mary's. So we used to be able to go over there and play against LeBron and a bunch of his buddies and stuff over there. So that was always a fun experience.
Wait. You played against LeBron James?
Yeah. He was, I was a, let's see, I was a sophomore. He was a year below me. So we would, like I said, through Tony, you know, being the big player that he was, being Mr. Basketball in Ohio and everything, he kind of was, you know, I don't know, I guess he was friends with LeBron or something, and we ended up playing, you know, we'd go over there and play summer league games and stuff, a lot of open gym, you know, just games, not necessarily, I wasn't in the same conference as them in high school, so we didn't actually play in an official game or anything, but we'd go over there and play with him and some of his guys. I think I played against LeBron a couple of times in actual AAU games during the summers. Like I said, we were fairly close to grad. I think he was a year younger than me. But after the guy on my team, Tony, after he got Mr. Basketball that year, I think LeBron the next 3 years took, you know, Mr. Basketball in Ohio. So,
you ever try to take LeBron one-on-one, Matt?
I have a friend who likes to tell a story that I did, you know, make a shot or two over him. I don't remember it that way, but I think I do remember we were playing an AAU game. I think it was in Solon or something like that in Ohio there. And I think I made a couple threes, and I think they put LeBron on me, and I don't think I saw the ball after that. You don't realize just how big some of those guys are. I mean, his wingspan, I mean, he was, of course, he was still in high school, so at the time, I think he was probably 6'5 or so. I mean, you know, 6'5, 220 or something like that, which in high school is still pretty intense. Obviously, now he's about 6'8 or 6'9. He weighs about 270 or something, but he was, I mean, he was a big guy in high school, and you know, he was every bit, you know, he lived up to every bit of hype that he got in high school, that's for sure. But I don't think I actually ever scored on him. My friends might tell you otherwise, but
well, that's right, good. That's friends. Good. You got backers. You got guys to back you up.
I just go on with the story like, yeah, sure.
Well, but, I'm sure, you know, you obviously had to be a high caliber basketball player to go on and play at Ohio Wesleyan. They're known as the Battling Bishops. So what was your shining moment when you were playing for the Battling Bishops?
We beat we played against a team called Worcester College, and they were number one in the nation or in the country. They were ranked number one. We were in the same conference. We were unranked. I mean, we were a good team, but we weren't ranked like they were. And they came to Ohio Wesleyan. I think it was the last game of the season, one of the last conference games of the season. Like I said, they were ranked number one, and we upset them at home there, and it was fairly big news. So that was probably the biggest highlight, you know, in college.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Well, I noticed on your website you seemed like a tall guy, but I didn't realize how big you actually were. I mean, I could tell your head's over the horse's butt, so I figured you couldn't have been too short.
No, yeah, about 6'1"
or taller
so.
Taller than a horse's. Yeah. So. How many hands are you, Matt?
a good 16, so I don't know.
Hey, does your sister ever remind you of the fact that she got to play at a Division I school?
Yeah.
what are sisters for?
All the time. Oh, yeah. I mean, as kids, you know, I mean, especially as high schoolers, you know, you at the time, I think I was probably like, you know, Jackie won, you know, state title. Who cares? I don't, you know, no big deal, whatever, you know, because, and I mean, honestly, and then now looking back on it, it's like, man, I can't believe, I mean, that is not an easy thing to do what they did. They won the state title, and, you know, she went on to Division I scholarship. So, yeah, she, I guess, turns out she was the better athlete.
Well, being a basketball guy, you must be interested in what's happening now with the NCAA tournament. Do you fill out a bracket every year?
You know what? I've been so busy. I do fill out a bracket, but I do terrible. Well, of course, even when I did pay attention, I never really did that good anyway. That's a tough thing to do, to predict those games. I will fill out a bracket, but I've been so busy, you know, with other stuff. I just haven't quite paid attention like I used to, which I guess is a good thing, though, you know. We stay busy at the barn, so.
He is trainer Matt Shearer, and he is our special guest on Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton. Matt, during the commercial break, we were talking about your father, who is now retired. He's a retired lawyer. He helps you now doing some different things behind the scenes, so to speak. He's not necessarily a horse person, but he can help you in a lot of other ways. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, no, it's been great. I mean, he's helped me, you know, with some marketing and advertising, you know, and kind of hence the radio interview here. I mean, he helped me, with stuff like that. And we haven't really gotten to the point where, you know, I necessarily need a lawyer or anything like that.
Well, you might. I didn't know that this was a marketing advertising play for you. Wait till you get the bill.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, it's worked out well for me here. We pulled one off on you guys. No, but it's been great. I mean, he's retired now, and you know, we kind of talk about. It's kind of fun to have him involved in everything, and you know, we talk on the phone probably every morning about, you know, what we need to do to grow the business and stuff like that. So it's a good kind of, you know, family thing right now, I guess. And I just have to talk my mom maybe into doing the bookkeeping or something for free at some point.
What
are parents for, you know? I mean,
what was their reaction when they put you through college and now you say you're going to be a horse trainer? What was their initial reaction?
I mean, I guess you would usually think parents probably think you're crazy or something, but no, my mom and dad, they're great. I mean, they're the type that, you know, they'd support you no matter what you decide to do. I mean, I think there was just kind of, you know, just kind of talk about, you know, make sure you have a plan and, you know, make sure it's something that you really want to do. If you want to, you know, put all that, you know, time and effort into it, then that's what you should do. I mean, kind of try to do what you love and it doesn't so much feel like work, you know, all the time when you're doing something that you really love. And I think they could tell that, you know, I had kind of gotten to that point where I was talking about it all the time and they could just tell that it was something that I, you know, wanted to do. And I think they felt like I could be, you know, successful at it. They were great. I mean, it's obviously, like we talked about earlier, it's not necessarily a career path that, you know, someone that comes from where I came from necessarily takes, but that's okay. You know, we've done well so far, so they're happy, obviously.
Matt, how about now? What do they think when they see you saddle those horses and they watch your horses run?
Oh, my mom, my mom probably gets more nervous than I do. I know that. But they just enjoy, you know, watching me. You know, I think they somehow, you know, kind of get a kick out of it watching it on TV or something like that. They enjoy it. It's kind of like, when I was, you know, younger or playing sports or something like that, it's a little bit, I think, a way for them to, you know, the way they like to watch me, you know, play sports or basketball, soccer, whatever. I think they kind of enjoy now that kind of translate into watching, you know, my horses run or sometimes train. You know, sometimes they come for a visit or something and want to watch the horses train or whatever. So I think it's fun for them, which makes me feel good.
Well, your mom shouldn't worry too much. You're winning at a 37% clip, and you're in the money 75% of the time. So
tell her that.
With a record like that, she can just sit there and have That's a beer and enjoy the races.
I know, right? She's just a nervous person. I tend not to be kind of the opposite. I usually don't get too worked up or nervous about stuff, but yeah, mom definitely gets worried or nervous. So
will they bet on your horses, Matt?
No, I don't think so. I take that back. I think my mom, I showed my mom how to bet a couple times when they came to the races last year, but they would definitely need me there to show them, you know, how to put the money in and how to actually place the bet and everything.
So they haven't opened up an online account yet. At least not that you know about.
Not yet. It's still early. It's still early. Now that my dad's retired, I don't know. He might be betting on races. I don't know.
Why not? Tell me about the day you won your first race.
First race, I had claimed a horse named Grateful Life. Claimed him at Churchill for, I think it was for 15, and I remember looking at him, and I think he was a little bit of a class drop, but I remember he had, he broke his maiden at Turfway on the Poly, and this was in November that I claimed him, so it was getting towards the end of the meet, and I knew Turfway was coming up in December. So he was coming off a little bit of a layoff and, you know, a little bit of a red flag, you know, maybe dropping a class, long layoff, whatever. But, you know, we decided to take the chance and ended up claiming him. I think he ran third that day, but he got something out of the race and breezed him maybe 2 weeks later and put him into a race, allowance race at Turfway in December. And I think it was my third or fourth start, as a trainer, and it was a allowance race. It was a little any other than, you know, $19,000 allowance race or something. And he ended up, you know, we ran him in that race. He, you know, went straight to the lead and never really looked back. He ended up winning by a couple lengths. So it was cool. I mean, it was, you know, I'm sure any trainer would tell you it's hard to describe, you know, that feeling of the first win. But I was definitely, you know, definitely exciting. You know, parents calling me. I got, you know, other people, you know, friends, other trainers, assistants texting and calling and stuff. So it was cool.
Yeah, there's nothing like that first victory. And, you know, you have a small stable and you get to, you know, be hands-on all the time. That makes a big difference, too, when you're starting out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're able to, you know, with a large barn, sometimes it's hard to keep track of horses or something. But, I mean, yeah, for me, it's, you know, a smaller barn, so you kind of get to you know, pay attention to things a little bit more, and it's not as hectic, and you're able to customize maybe your, you know, certain horses' training schedules or regimens a little bit more, you know, and sometimes certain horses require a little bit more attention or a little bit special care or stuff like that, which we're able to do being a smaller stable. And, you know, I know a lot of, you know, a lot of the times right now, you know, I, you know, just to save on payroll and stuff, I'll cool out a lot of horses and hot walk a lot of my own horses that I, you know, I train. And you kind of, it can be an advantage sometimes because you kind of pick up on, you know, little stuff that sometimes you may not pick up on if you have a real large barn and, you know, you got five different horses in a set training at one time, you know. So it's sometimes it has its benefits of being a smaller, you know, stable.
Yeah, I always used to like to walk my horses. I feel like being a hot walker is my perfect job. It's what I'm most suited to be. And
yeah, turning left.
Yeah, and it's kind of peaceful and quiet. And I think when you walk a horse, you kind of get a rapport with them and you understand them a little better. And my guys that work for me, I mean, I had some outstanding help over the years, but they used to kind of get mad at me when I'd walk a horse. But I used to like to do it just to, especially like if you just claimed one or whatever, you kind of want to get in the horse's head a little bit and just see what they're about and what they may be looking at or what they like. And I don't know. It's kind of a weird esoteric kind of thing, I guess. But
no,
but
yeah. I mean, I know what you mean. You kind of, you know, you get to know the horse a little bit, you know, being that close to him and you know, doing everything, you know, walking them, and you kind of get to know them a little bit. You know, you get to you know their little idiosyncrasies and little stuff that, you know, that you pick up about them or learn about them that you otherwise may not if you're not walking or if you're not paying that close attention.
Matt, so many times when assistant trainers decide to go out on their own, they have the benefit of acquiring some clients from their mentor, from their operation in some ways.
Now you tell me.
Yeah, you didn't have that benefit, my friend.
No. No, not really. And it wasn't that I was unprepared or something leaving. I mean, I was prepared to leave. I just, at the time, I mean, you just kind of get, I just got to that point where I wanted to go out on my own. I just was kind of excited and wanted my own thing. And you know, I had one guy with me that it was a little bit of a unique situation in that this other guy who's an owner, his name's Mitch Butler, who I, you know, primarily claimed horses for him at the very beginning. He, you know, kind of, he helped me out and gave me the money and kind of the start of claiming horses right when I had left Kenny. But I didn't have like that big owner from the previous trainer, you know, from Kenny or something, tell me, hey, you know, why don't we go out on our own and you train my horses. It just didn't, you know, necessarily work out for me like that. I didn't really, you know, feel like I needed to do that. I mean, any owner of, you know, of Kenny's or something that at some point wanted to contact me later would have been fine, but I didn't necessarily feel like I needed to, you know, advertise the fact that I was going out on my own and that I needed owners or something. I just, you know, it was one of those things where I wanted my own horses. And like I said, Mitch, Mitch and I kind of partnered up and we started claiming horses, and that's kind of how it all got started.
How about now? Is the goal to try to acquire relationships with other owners and maybe owners that would let you go to the sale and pick out horses for them and then go ahead and train those horses?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's always the goal. I mean, you know, I'd like a large, you know, stable. I mean, I would like an operation like Kenny's, and I think I'm capable of that because, you know, of my experience working for him all that time. You, like I said, you know, you learn a lot on how just how to run a large operation. I mean, it's very different than really what I'm doing right now, which is just, you know, a couple horses to train. And it was good working for him, obviously, because you get that experience to that you can hopefully use one day. But it just depends. I mean, I think the more exposure and the more races you win, I think obviously the more owners will take notice of. And I think a lot of it can be kind of referrals and stuff from certain people, you know, as far as picking up new owners. It was good enough of I just recently picked up a fairly new owner a couple months ago, a guy by the name of Chester Thomas, who has Allied Racing Stable, and I think he was actually leading owner at Ellis last year. But I was actually introduced to him through, friends of mine. Actually, Sean Bridgmahan had helped me out a lot there. He's good friends with him and kind of introduced me to Chester, and so did Buff Bradley. So it's just, just picking up new owners and stuff. It can be tough, but, we'll get there at some point here. I'm not too worried.
Yeah, clients are always important, and sometimes shows like this can make a difference. I know when I was training, I was on television one night at Santa Anita, and a guy was trying to decide between Mike Mitchell and me, unbeknownst to either one of us. And at the last minute, he liked what I said on TV, and he was one of the best clients I ever had. I trained for him for 7 years. So you never know where people are coming from, and the more relationships you have, the better off you are when it comes to getting clients.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Matt, you mentioned Sean Bridgmahan and Buff Bradley, two of our favorite people. How did those relationships come about for you?
With Sean, it's kind of funny. When I worked for Kenny, Kenny really didn't ride Sean that much. So I really didn't know Sean for the first couple years that I worked on the track. I mean, obviously I knew who he was, but I wasn't necessarily friends or anything with him. And I remember I claimed a horse or two right when I went out on my own, you know, back in November of 2015, I think. And claimed a couple horses, and I think I claimed this one horse, gray horse by the name of Rubel. And I was looking for someone to ride him, someone who had previously ridden him, and I think Landeros had ridden him before. So I called Landeros' agent, and you know, I wanted him to come breeze him, and you know, so Landeros was supposed to come breeze the horse, and then I think he got sick or something that day. He couldn't make it, so the agent sent Sean, which I mean was fine with me. I mean, I didn't really know Sean at the time that well. And, you know, I remember him breezing him, and he liked the horse, and I went ahead and put Sean on, and Sean ran, we ended up second. I think it was my first start of my career, I think, or maybe a second start. But anyways, that's kind of how I got started with Sean, and you know, you just, a lot of horses I claim seem to kind of fit his riding style, and, you know, he's done real well for me. A lot of horses I claim, I just, you know, put Sean right on him, and, you know, there's really no thinking about it or anything like that, because, you know, he's a good rider, and obviously he's been good to me, and he's kind of helped me out, you know, introducing me to like I mentioned, Chester, and he's just a good guy, you know. But really it just came about that, you know, that Landeros that day had gotten sick, and Sean had come and helped me out, and I said, well, you know, good guy, I'm going to try to put him on as many horses as I can.
Matt, only a couple minutes left here, but how about Buff? How did that relationship come about?
Buff, I think, you know, I just got to know Buff just through working at the racetrack. I was dating one of his assistants there for a little bit. I think maybe that I probably met him a little bit or got to know him a little bit more through that, you know, just maybe being around his barn and everything. But Buff, you know, he's the nicest guy. I mean, he's a really good guy. And obviously he helped me out and introduced me to some people too. So, you know, he's just a good person.
Well, Matt, because you listen to these programs and you've gone back and heard some of our podcasts, you know that we typically like to end the show by asking trainers to let us know something different about them that people may not realize. We talked about your love of basketball. We know how passionate you are about horse racing. In 30 seconds or less, what else does Matt Shearer enjoy doing?
You know, well, of course, well, it's not really related to basketball. I mean, I do a lot of, you know, running and stuff. It's probably, you know, next to working, it's probably, you know, what I do the most of. I mean, I do a lot of running. I enjoy getting outside and running as much as I can, you know. So it's just kind of a, you know, another hobby for me. It takes away a lot of the stress and you know, sometimes problems that you might have at the barn. And it's just good to get outside and run as much as you can. And that's really what I enjoy most when I'm not working at the bar and I'm usually, you know, out running.
Well, Matt, we have to run as well, up against the end of the show. Thanks for being here with us. All the best moving forward. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, we're going to send you a gift courtesy of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. We'll get those to you. Good luck, my friend.
Thank you. I appreciate having me on. Thank
all
you.
Right. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. That's it. Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton. We'll talk to you next time.